This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting rolled banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Before we get started, a reminder that you can follow me on Twitter at Doc Staples. We're also on Facebook at the Unconquered Podcast. And don't forget, you can subscribe to this podcast through iTunes or your podcast manager of choice. You can also listen to this podcast, of course, on Seminole Sports Radio from VSporto and listen on your mobile devices via the Seminole Sports Radio app available on iTunes or the Android Marketplace. And if you are enjoying this podcast, please rate the podcast on iTunes and tell a friend. Definitely helps us out quite a bit when you do that. Moves us up in the podcast rankings and such. So definitely go do that. Now today we've got a couple things we're going to talk about. First of all, we're just going to talk a little bit about the national championship game last night, the contest between Alabama and Clemson. Obviously, that has some direct impact on Florida State looking forward, both in terms of the perception of Clemson and the rest of the ACC, and in terms of recruiting battles and so on. And also, you know, obviously those two teams are going to be two of the favorites for the playoff in 2016, along with Florida State. And it's worth taking some look at where Florida State and Clemson and these others stack up moving forward. So we'll do that. And then in our final segment today, we're going to talk about Florida State's players who have entered the draft. We're going to talk a little bit broadly in terms of where things stand for players that are likely to get drafted, but most of it will focus on Jalen Ramsey, who is obviously the most likely to get chosen anywhere early. Ramsey's almost assuredly a top 10, most likely a top 5 pick in the draft, and we'll talk a little bit about his game and evaluation and such, do just a little bit of preliminary stuff, do a lot more of that stuff in terms of NFL draft as we get a little bit further down the line. But plenty to talk about today, so let's go ahead and get to it. Well, first things first about this Bama-Clemson game, what a great game. I mean, this was a really fun watch. Tell you what, when Lane Kiffin is part of a national championship game, it really seems to turn out quite entertaining. I mean, you go back to the last time that Lane Kiffin was in a national championship game was Vince Young against that Vince Young and that Texas team against that that USC dynasty level team. And this game, with about seven and four minutes left, looked exactly like that game. There was a chance that Deshaun Watson was gonna pull a Vince Young, but ultimately the Bama offense, led by Lane Kiffin and Florida State product Jake Coker, who didn't play all that well through the first half, really first half plus, but then really closed the game well in the last half of the third quarter through the fourth quarter. He stepped up and made the plays that Bama needed him to make, particularly to O.J. Howard. And I'd mentioned on Twitter before the game that I thought O.J. Howard was at the tight end position was one of the keys to this game for Alabama, because I didn't think Alabama would be able to run the ball all that well against this Clemson front, which turned out to be true. Henry had 158 total yards. He had that 150 yard run. And then other than that, averaged 3 yards a carry, in this game. And, you know, that's basically what I expected in this game. They fed him a lot, and there were a lot of plays in this game, a lot of drives. So there was more yardage to be had because of the pace that both teams played with here, which again is a departure from what Saban has done in the past. But he's been more willing to go that route the last couple years as he's had so much depth that he's willing to let teams basically bash their heads against the wall enough to let Bama's depth basically take over. And that's what happened in this game. But either way, it looked like Deshaun Watson might go all Vince Young on a Lane Kiffin coached team once again. And really he did, but Bama's offense was just a little bit too much, and Clemson wore down the stretch a little bit. I thought that Bama's depth in the fourth quarter really was probably going to be the difference coming into this game. And it wound up being that difference. Now at the same time, a few things stuck out in this game to me. One is that Alabama had more trouble up front against Clemson than Florida State did this year. Particularly on the offensive side, Alabama's offensive line really struggled against Clemson's defensive line. They gave up a lot of tackles for loss. Looking at the numbers here, they gave up 9 tackles for loss against a Clemson front that had a lot of tackles for loss all year. Florida State only gave up 4 tackles for a loss against Clemson, and none from the defensive line, which that defensive line led the nation in tackles for a loss, and they only had 4 against Florida State, which is interesting, which is the lowest, along with NC State, was the lowest number that they gave up against, that they were able to get against any opponent. And I think it's worth mentioning, because there are a lot of people out there in my listening audience, a lot of listeners of this show, and a lot of people that I've interacted with in terms of the Florida State fan base, in terms of social media, who are convinced that the Florida State offensive line was terrible this year. And I keep coming back to, a lot of this is selection bias. A lot of this is fans see all the flaws of their own team, and then they measure their team by basically the highlights of other teams that they don't watch as closely. And, you know, this is where how many Florida State fans out there were watching this game were really surprised. I bet you a lot of Florida State fans were really surprised to watch Alabama's offensive line struggle so much against this Clemson defensive line. And again, I think a lot of this is that Florida State fans are as anti-ACC and as little big man syndrome on this stuff as anybody. You talk about anti-ACC bias or anti-Florida State bias from ESPN. Well, the Florida State fan base has bought that as much as anybody. And this idea that, oh, Clemson's defensive line, it's not like Florida State's playing Alabama or LSU. Well, Clemson's defensive line appears to have been the best that Bama played all year as well. And I think it's telling that Rick Trickett-coached Florida State offensive line was able to do so well against that Clemson defensive line. Yes, they failed in a couple short yardage situations, but so did Alabama. I mean, you look at the very end of that game, Bama was with Derrick Henry, who is a really, really good short yardage runner. It's one place where he's really, in many respects, a better runner than Dalvin Cook. There aren't many places where he's better than Dalvin Cook, but in that some of the short yardage stuff, his ability to go airborne and use that 6'3", 6'4" frame to get a little bit of additional yardage is one place where he, I think, is a better player than Dalvin Cook. If you've got one guy, you know, if you need a half a yard on a fourth and short, the guy that you're probably going to want to have there is Derrick Henry, because of his ability to do that. But Bama struggled. Even, you know, they put their elephant package on the goal line and got stoned, what, 3-4 times in this game. And again, it's worth noting, because every offensive line, when you're facing a quality defensive line, is going to have some struggles. You're going to have some missed assignments. You're going to have some mistake. You're going to have missed blocks. You can't block the level of athlete that Clemson or an Alabama or a Florida State or an LSU or these kinds of teams are putting out there at defensive line. You can't block those players every play. You're going to miss blocks. You're going to get beat at times. Now, the key is making sure that you work well enough as a unit, and that you basically are assignment sound enough that stuff is minimized, and that when you get beat, you don't get just blown by. Well, you know, bottom line, I think we saw in this game, one of the most interesting takeaways is that, like I said, Alabama's offensive line, which, again, Florida State fans have, in many respects, rightly looked to as the gold standard, the standard by which they compare themselves, struggled more against Clemson than Florida State's very young offensive line did. And again, I think that speaks well for what's going to happen next year, when this was a more veteran Alabama line than Florida State's line was. FSU returns the entire 3 deep on the offensive line for next year, excluding some attrition that's going to happen in the offseason. I wouldn't be surprised to see a couple players go ahead and decide that they want to move on out of the program. Some of the players that are looking at the depth chart or whatever decide that they necessarily don't want to stick around. That happens at every program, and that happens on the lines in particular, because there's just numbers games that happen And I think when you're looking at what Florida State's looking at bringing in terms of the offensive line class for the 2016 signing class, I think there's some indication that they're expecting some attrition there. But either way, Florida State's returning all of their significant offensive linemen for 2016, and that's a line that actually was able to survive, that actually played well against Clemson. And at Clemson, where in that environment, it's actually harder to block because, again, you've got the disadvantage of the home crowd. That's one place where a home crowd matters, is in terms of snap counts and things like that. You're going to have more difficulty on the road than you will at home or in a bowl setting because of the noise and because of the defensive line's ability to get a jump off the ball and some of those things. You have to do more silent counts and some of that, which gives an edge to the front a little bit more. But, you know, you look at the stats, Florida State rushed for 197 yards, including sacks, against Clemson. And Alabama had 138. So Florida State had, 57 yards? More than Alabama in terms of rushing yards, including sacks, in this game. Dalvin Cook had 194 yards on 21 carries. Derrick Henry had 58 for 36. And again, if you pull away Dalvin Cook's long run and Derrick Henry's long run, Cook still averaged more yards per carry in that game. So it's worth noting because, again, I keep going back to Florida State's offensive line in 2015 was actually pretty good. It was not great. It was pretty good. It was above average, even for a quality Power 5 team. It was above average. It just had some issues with things that you expect from a young offensive line, particularly on the penalty side. And that stuff started to get cleaned up late in the year, but that's the sort of thing that you expect from young linemen. And then when you have four new starters, and really the fifth starter is a guy that only started a few games at the end of the prior year, you've got super young players, you're going to expect some penalty issues and some of those things. That's what you expect. Normally, though, you only have one or two of those guys on your line, so you deal with the one or two penalties that guy may give per game. Well, if you got a bunch of them, then you're going to have more. And that's basically what you had. And then the injuries, where you have, you know, nine different players start, you have all sorts of different lineups and that sort of thing, that changes things in terms of what you're able to do in terms of continuity and learning to play with each other and all of those things, the communication issues and that sort of thing. That's where Florida State's offensive line didn't regress. You didn't see the progress as much as what they had progressed because of the injuries and the different lineups and all that. But again, this speaks well to where Florida State is going moving forward into the 2016 season, looking at, again, how a gold standard team struggled with Clemson up front at least as much, and I would say more, than Clemson did on that side of the ball. Now, on the flip side, listen, Alabama's defensive line is better than Florida State's defensive line, and Clemson did dang well against them as well. Now, they got bailed out by Deshaun Watson being a magician, but again, they handled Bama's front, I think, better than most people expected. And Bama had more trouble once you know the rubber hit the road. Bama had more trouble with Deshaun Watson than Florida State did. And again, this is in a bowl game setting, not on the road. It's a different kind of setting. I mean, the scenario is different, context is different, but Bama had more trouble with Watson than Florida State did. Again, Watson broke Vince Young's total yardage record for a championship game, 488 total yards. Young had held the previous record with 467 against USC. But you could see Bama really, really struggled against Watson. And one of the reasons I think that is Bama, we've talked about this quite a bit on this podcast over the years, that Florida State's defense is really very much designed in terms of recruiting and in terms of personnel and all of that, it's really first and foremost designed to stop the spread. A lot of length and a lot of versatile players who are interchangeable, a lot of players who, you know, you can stick out there and let them chase. Not quite as much size in the linebackers and so on. And particularly, I mean, Florida State's base being a 4-2-5, which, you know, Alabama based in a 4-2-5 as well, but their linebackers, you're talking about huge linebackers. And a huge defensive line, and not going to the dime or even seven defensive back packages in the way that Florida State was willing and able to do this year, and that's despite the fact that FSU is starting a walk-on at a former walk-on at the star position, which is a key position in this defense. And Clemson attacked the star position against both Alabama and Florida State. And, you know, again, you get Florida State fans who are saying, why didn't Florida State play its four-star, you know, a Marcus Lewis or someone at the star position, aside from the fact that Lewis was hurt for most of the year. You could see that Clemson attacked the star position against FSU, against Javon Elliott. And Elliott acquitted himself pretty well. But they attacked Bama's star as well, who is a five-star true freshman, Minkah Fitzpatrick, who played very well all year, really. And they torched him. I mean, he got eaten alive in this game. And, you know, Minkah Fitzpatrick is going to be a really, really good player. But again, it shows you that even a five-star freshman who has been on campus for quite a while, who has multiple games of starting experience at this point, started basically the entire year, is as ready to go as anyone. He's a super smart kid. Even there, you can see that when you're playing a freshman, it's tough. You know, very few true freshmen are really ready. And then you add a couple injuries to it, and you see why Javon Elliott became the best solution for Florida State at that position. But again, Clemson attacked that position against both Alabama and FSU, and I expect that to be the case next year as well. Now, I think Florida State's probably going to be a lot better at the star position than they've been since Jalen Ramsey was there. Certainly better than they were pretty much throughout 2015 with the combination of players that they're going to be able to put out there. And again, Florida State was not as versatile in the secondary this year as they had been previously, because at the free safety position, as good as LaMarcus Brutus is as a center fielder, as smart as he was, as important as he was to that defense in being able to make sure that everybody was in the right position and also playing over the top and serving as an eraser, he was a guy that you couldn't have in single coverage. And the same thing is true at the star position. You had too much of a weakness there that you had to worry about. And then the other safety position, if Derwin James is playing up at all, that other safety position where you had Tyler Hunter, you had sometimes Nate Andrews, again, you had some weaknesses there that they had to cover for. Not as bad as the safety position had been in 2014, which we'd talked about coming into the year. It should be better. But again, you get Trey Marshall back on the field. Florida State's defense was much better when Trey Marshall was on the field. A yard better per play when he was on the field in the games that he actually played. You could see that yard per play difference against Miami and Louisville, where they were over a yard per play worse in both games as soon as he left the field, once with suspension or once with ejection and once with the season ending injury. But basically, you could see that Bama had more trouble with Watson, in part because they, as much as, and, you know, Bud Elliott from Tomahawk Nation has mentioned on Twitter and elsewhere that Florida State doesn't have a player who would have started in Bama's front seven this year. And there have been a lot of complaints from Florida State fans that, you know, Bud's being a Bama homer and so on. Bud's right. Florida State doesn't have a player who would have started in Bama's front seven this year. It's true. But Bama also doesn't have Jalen Ramsey, Marquez White, or Derwin James in their secondary. All three of those guys would have started at Alabama this year. So that's one of the reasons that Florida State had less trouble in many respects with Deshaun Watson. Now, Watson still was the reason that Clemson won that game, particularly with some late scrambles. But Florida State could shadow him with Derwin James and also with Terrence Smith, who, even though he wouldn't have started at Bama, for what FSU does against a spread team, Terrence Smith's a really good player. And, you know, in many respects, aside from Reggie Ragland, you may want Terrence Smith out there because he's almost a defensive back against a Clemson over some of the Bama linebackers. Just not in what Bama wants to do. He wouldn't have started there. But, you know, when you're a Florida State scheme wanting to do what they're doing against Clemson, you may want Terrence Smith. The other thing is that they were able to put seven defensive backs and put Nate Andrews up there. So whereas Alabama was much stronger in the front seven, And again, I want to be clear, that's this year for Alabama in the front seven. Florida State doesn't have a player that would have started. But if you look forward, Josh Sweat would start at Alabama. I'm not sure, probably next year, but certainly by the time he was a junior. I mean, again, you got to remember, Deshaun Hand was the number one recruit in the country coming out of high school. He was second team, really, for Alabama this year. That's where Sweat would have been third team probably this year, maybe second team. But he, again, would be in the rotation and eventually, you know, would have been in the rotation certainly next year and then maybe starting next year and certainly by his junior year. And, you know, Derek Nnadi and DeMarcus Christmas, they probably started Alabama by their – and probably Nnadi may have a chance at starting next year. DeMarcus Christmas, maybe a chance the year after. And DeMarcus Walker was a kid that probably is in the rotation this year as a second-level guy. Next year, I'm not sure if he'd start, but he'd be close. So a lot of that has to do with how good and how experienced and how deep that Bama front was this year. But you go down that list, Florida State's building in terms of their players who are going to be competitive. I think FSU's front will be competitive with Bama's front next year because of who Bama's losing this year and who's stepping forward. Those guys plus Ricky Leonard, who I think played extremely well the last three games and showed that he's ready for the big time. He would have been ready to start next year had DeMarcus Walker left, but now he's going to be a guy that's going to be getting starter minutes and mixing in and allowing DeMarcus Walker to move around and get and stay fresh and all of that. That's a huge, huge, huge thing to have that kind of depth at that defensive end position, and having a 6'7", 280-pound guy that can move like that is really critical. But either way, Florida State had personnel that in many senses was better to handle a guy like Deshaun Watson because of being able to go 6'7" defensive backs and put some of that versatility on the field than what Bama did. And that was kind of revealing to see. Now, I do think Clemson wore down in this game. I think I was watching Watson in the fourth quarter about 10 minutes ago, and he just looked spent. He'd been banged up. And I think that was Bama's plan, was to make sure they hit him as much as possible and got him to where late in the game he didn't have much left. And I got to say, the kid's a warrior, because he not only survived, he led them on a couple more touchdown drives after it looked like he was just ready to go to the sideline and just sit for a while. He was exhausted. But and at the end of the day, here's the thing. I think Clemson might well have won this game had Mackenzie Alexander stayed healthy. The game changed. You got to remember, Clemson was up in this game when Mackenzie Alexander got hurt. And it changed in terms of what Bama was able to do downfield and how Clemson was not able to tack. I mean, Mackenzie Alexander, not only is he a great cover corner, he's really good. He showed this all year in terms of coming up aggressively and tackling on the outside. And you look at O.J. Howard's late long big play around the edge. That was at Mackenzie Alexander's position. Mackenzie Alexander's replacement didn't make the tackle. Alexander makes that tackle. So that shows how close these two teams were. I think that Mackenzie Alexander is the difference in this game. Him going down with an injury probably cost Clemson the national title. And I think Clemson also missed Deion Kane. And then if we want to go all the way back, Clemson certainly missed Mike Williams, their best wide receiver. What's amazing to me is that they were so competitive with a Bama team that is absolutely loaded, given the losses that they've had. Shaq Lawson playing hurt, Mackenzie Alexander playing hurt through the first quarter and a half, and then getting hurt, and then, you know, still competing without Mackenzie Alexander out there, and Alexander being, I think, the difference in them winning or losing the game. Remarkable. Got to give a lot of credit to Clemson. I think they may well have been the best team all year. Which, again, goes to show Florida State very nearly beat them on their home field. I mean, FSU was tied going into the fourth quarter with Clemson. So, again, a lot of things to take away from that in terms of the Florida State angle, and in terms of looking at how close the margins are nationally, even though Alabama's been recruiting better than anybody. Now, moving forward, looking at these teams going forward, you know, in 2016... Alabama loses a ton. You're going to see some early entries. You're going to see, you know, a lot of that great defensive front is going to be in the NFL next year, fortunately for the SEC West and the rest of the country. I expect Derrick Henry will declare. There's no reason for him to take more 30-carry games at Alabama without getting paid. But I expect Bo Scarborough next year to be better than Derrick Henry. Bo Scarborough is a freak. I think maybe more of a freak than Derrick Henry. More of a load. He's a guy that delivers the blow in the hole more than Derrick Henry. Henry's a little more of a glider. Scarborough is a violent runner. So Alabama is going to be really, really tough to deal with in the running game next year, maybe even more than this year. And Bama's secondary was young this year, and I think they're going to be better next year with Jeremy Pruitt at the defensive coordinator position, taking over, working with those defensive backs. And I'm also interested to see how Bama shifts philosophy a little bit with Jeremy Pruitt. You know, I've talked to Jeremy Pruitt in the past about this, and you know, Pruitt thought that Bama had gotten too big to have success against spread offenses, which goes a little bit back to what we were just talking about in terms of personnel against the Clemson-type team. And I think Pruitt's going to try to get a little bit smaller, a little bit less bulky, particularly in the back seven and on the edges, whereas Kirby Smart is a little bit more about size. I think Pruitt's going to get a little bit smaller. And I actually think this is why Jaquan Yulee just decommitted from Alabama. I mean, he's one of the top linebackers in the state of Alabama, was committed to Alabama for a long time, but he's a 245-pound inside linebacker. And I suspect that he doesn't fit Pruitt's vision, and they suggested that maybe he doesn't fit as well into Alabama's plans for the future. So it's going to be interesting to see how that goes. I think Bama's going to be pretty dang good on defense, even despite their losses, thanks to what's going to happen in terms of their secondary. And they're going to be a little bit more multiple, a little bit more more of a spread buster defense within the next two years with Jeremy Pruitt. Now, I think also Clemson's going to be ridiculous on offense in 2016. Mike Williams looks like he's going to return. I mean, it's not clear. I mean, he could potentially declare for the draft after that neck injury, but if he returns, wow. You add him to this offense. I mean, this offense would have been the best in the country. And then you add Deion Kane back. The offensive line returns the key pieces, including, you know, freshman All-American Mitch Hyatt at left tackle. Defensively, I think, though, they're going to take a big step back, a bigger step back than people expect. You know, everybody's looking at 2015 and saying, yeah, they lost a lot in 2014, but they just reloaded in 2015, so we can expect that in 2016 when they lose a lot again. I'm not sure that's so true. They absorbed those losses in 2015, and they were not as good defensively. They struggled more in the fourth quarter, and they didn't have as much depth, and they wore down in games. You could see that. And Florida State can testify to how difficult it is to lose that kind of talent, not just one, but 2 years in a row. You have to rebuild eventually if you're losing that level talent repeatedly, especially since Clemson is not recruiting quite at the Bama level. And they're losing Shaq Lawson. I think Dodds, especially after this game, the way that he dominated that offensive line from Alabama, should consider going. They're going to lose another pair of senior defensive tackles, big kids. Now they're getting a really, really good five-star defensive tackle who will be ready to play right away. One of the few guys that's going to be ready to play right away in terms of a true freshman. But then they're going to lose their best player on defense with Mackenzie Alexander. You know, and I think their defense is very different with him on the field versus off. And their safeties got exposed against both North Carolina and Bama. So as long as they're playing a team that has a quarterback that can challenge you downfield a little bit, that's going to be a place where I think next year, depending on what happens personnel-wise, I think they could potentially get exposed again. I just don't think they're going to be quite as good up front. They're going to have some other issues. They're going to be maybe just a tick behind where they were this year in the secondary. I think Florida State-Clemson next year will be one of the more fascinating matchups in college football because of Florida State's secondary and ability to play seven defensive backs who can run and tackle and all of that against a guy like Deshaun Watson and that wide receiver core. And again, Florida State having a very, very good defensive line next year and a guys that can move on the edge particularly. That's huge. So Bama struggled in part because they lacked the personnel that Florida State's going to have for next year. Now, the question, of course, is you know, FSU at the quarterback position, which we'll talk about here shortly on one of the next podcasts. But a lot to think about in terms of what came out of this game. A lot of interesting stuff. Moving into the second segment here, we're just going to do a very brief segment talking about a little bit about this is just preliminary stuff because we're going to spend a lot more time on this once we actually get a little bit closer to the draft. It's just too early at this point to talk about, but it's one thing that some people have requested that I talk about, and that's looking at some of the Florida State draft prospects, particularly Jalen Ramsey coming into this draft season. First piece of news, of course, is that DeMarcus Walker, Florida State defensive end, who was very, very much considering and I think initially leaning towards going to the NFL, decided to return after getting his NFL evaluation and recommendation to return to school. He decided to come back, and that's huge for the Florida State defense because, again, as I said earlier, Ricky Leonard is a guy that was ready to – he's ready to play. He's ready to be a starter at Florida State, but now he doesn't have to be. He's going to be a 1B at this point, and that's just gigantic to be able to do that and put that kind of talent at the second level, which is again what Alabama was able to do this year, where they had starter level guys that were backups. It's what Clemson was able to do in 2014, where they had starter level guys like Shaq Lawson as backups. That's what you've got to have a truly elite defense at the college football level, and Florida State's going to be able to do that up front at a couple positions because of that decision to return. One guy returning in that case makes a really big difference in terms of altering what you're able to do depth-wise, and Florida State just got a lot deeper because of having one of their best defensive linemen returning. Now, obviously, Roberto Aguayo did declare for the draft as expected. He's going to go probably before the third round is out. He'll probably be off the board. You talk about where he sits. You know, again, we've talked a little bit about this preliminarily, but once again, I'll just repeat that the one concern about him moving forward is that he just doesn't have quite as strong of. I mean, he's not Sebastian Janikowski in terms of leg strength. You know, precision and accuracy. He's the most accurate kicker in NCAA history, in percentage wise. Accuracy is the name of his game, and at the same point. And that's why he's going to get drafted. But at the same point, you know, leg strength really matters in the NFL, and you got to have guys that can kick the ball through the end zone and some of those things. And he's still got a little ways to go there. And there are times where I think the biggest weakness in Roberto's game is that he actually has a tendency sometimes when he tries to kick it too hard, that's when he has problems. And so he's still really learning to, you know, to be a guy. It's sort of like you're a good driver of the golf ball, really consistent. He's kind of Justin Leonard from back in the day, for those of you golf fans out there, or, you know, a Zach Johnson for more recent golf fans. Actually, I guess maybe the best comparison, given the quality, the success that he's had, is Jordan Spieth being, you know, the elite of the elite, but not having the length of some of the bashers in this guy that is consistently able to put it in the right spot in the fairway. But, you know, when he has to absolutely go after it and add those extra 15 or 20 yards, he's just not able to do that without being a little bit more scattershot at this point. And that's the biggest place where he has room for growth. And he's talked, you know, he's talked both on and off the record at times over the last couple of years that's what he's really working hardest on, is he's trying to lift very hard and get his legs stronger so that he's just able to put more force into the football. And I think that's going to come with time, but he'll probably go sometime in the, you know, before the third round's out. But the other early entry is obviously the one that is that is top billing. And that's Jalen Ramsey. And to me, I'm interested to see where he goes. I've seen some mock drafts have had him fall as far as ninth to Tampa. Obviously, the Tampa Bay fans out there would be thrilled with that. But I don't think there's any way that guy falls that far in the draft. This guy, I mean, he's one of those guys that you see a number of, I think there are a lot of NFL guys who try to get cute with their evaluations. And they say, well, you know, he can play corner, but he's really just a safety. And, you know, he's a great athlete, but we're just not sure. But listen, don't overthink this. Truth is, Jalen Ramsey is just flat out special. I think the best defensive back prospect I have seen at the college level since probably Charles Woodson. And you could argue for Ed Reed, maybe, but Ed Reed couldn't cover like this. He couldn't. He was a great safety prospect, and you know, same thing with Sean Taylor. Great safety prospect, probably a better safety prospect if we're just going safety prospects against than Jalen Ramsey. But Jalen Ramsey is pretty close to those guys as a safety prospect coming out. Listen, you know, you can't compare what Ed Reed did in the NFL to what Jalen Ramsey did. I'm just comparing them as prospects coming out. He's not far off from that as a safety prospect. But then he's also as good a corner prospect as you're going to see. So as a true defensive back prospect, he's as good as anybody I've seen, going back to probably Charles Woodson. And if we're looking at what to compare, you know, sort of how to compare Jalen Ramsey, I think athletically, maybe the best comparison is actually a former Seminole, Antonio Cromartie. You're looking at a guy that, again, is freakishly long, one of the fastest players in the NFL, you know, true track speed, vertical ability, able to jump out of the building, and physical kind of guy. Now, Jalen Ramsey is more physical than Antonio Cromartie, and he's certainly more polished coming out, and he's a higher football IQ guy than Antonio Cromartie. And in that respect, he's again, a long press vertical corner. You can compare him to a Richard Sherman, but he's faster than a Sherman. To me, the guy that you really have to go back to is probably Charles Woodson. This is a guy who can play, he's most ideally a press man corner, and he's a guy who can play cornerback for probably 8 or 10 years at the highest level of the game. I think this guy is going to be the best cover corner in the NFL within probably 2 years. But he can play and be one of the best corners in the league for 8 or 10 years, and then eventually move to safety, just like Charles Woodson. And I think he proved this season that he is a cornerback. And he will be elite with just a little bit of technical cleanup. And again, I'm going to go more into detail with this a little bit closer to the draft. But just to put a few things out there in terms of my evaluation, he's got a couple things in terms of technical stuff that he needs to clean up. One is that on vertical routes, he has the odd problem of actually getting overly what's called in phase. When you're coaching defensive backs, you want to talk about in phase and out of phase. On vertical routes, when a receiver is running down the field, the defensive back wants to be in the hip pocket of the offensive player. That's in phase. Out of phase is generally the term used for when you're in trail technique, when the offensive player has gotten past the cornerback, the defensive back, he's gotten past him and is now in that, you know, he's now off the back pocket or worse. That's out of phase. And this is something you hear all the time. It drives me insane that you hear color commentators saying, oh, well, you know, he's got to turn around and look for the football. That's why this is a problem. No. When you're out of phase, you're never supposed to look back for the football. You're supposed to find the hands and punch through the hands. That's how you're coached to do it. Because if you're out of phase and you look back, you're going to get even further behind. You only look back if you're in phase on the hip pocket. And the thing is, the best corners tend to be in phase. That's why they look back. So this is one of those things that, you know, the educated fan should know. No, the problem isn't that he didn't look back. The problem is that he was out of phase. You can't look back when you're out of phase. And you can still cover very well when you're out of phase. You just have to find the football by finding the receiver's hands first and punching through. So it's just a different technique when you're out of phase and when you're in phase. Well, Ramsey is so... He's such a student of the game, and he's so instinctive and was so good at diagnosing routes this year, and also is so fast that there were a number of times where he was running the route for the wide receiver on those vertical routes, and he was not in phase or out of phase. He's what I would call over phase. He was on the front pocket of the wide receiver. So he actually had gotten over top of the wide receiver and is in position, and then he's able to look back. But the problem is, if you're there, you have similar problems if you look back and the receiver can cut underneath you. Or you bring the back shoulder throw into play, which is what Miami did against him. That's what they located, I think, on Scouting Report, is, you know, the one score to Rayshon Scott, and also another later back shoulder throw on the sideline, on the short side. It's what we saw. And it brings the back shoulder into play when you're over phase. And so this is something that, at the next level, they're going to work with him on of trust your speed and actually let the wide receiver get a little bit, just a half a foot ahead of you and run off that hip pocket instead of running on his front pocket. Don't bring that back shoulder into play. Run, play through the back shoulder and trust your length and your speed if they do try to go over the top, but don't let him have the back shoulder. That one correction will make him an elite corner immediately. And that's just, again, he's so instinctive and so fast that not many guys can have that problem. This is a good player problem. The other problem that he's going to have to fix is tunnel vision. He gets so concerned with physically dominating the wide receiver across from him that sometimes he just forgets to play the game and find the football. And that's where, he just needs to, again, there's going to be an emphasis, I think, at the next level of stop focusing on this. Stop focusing on dominating him so much and be fluid and play the football and not the man a little bit more often. I think when he does that, this is a guy that's going to be a dominant corner and is going to produce more turnovers. And that gets to the few weaknesses that he did show this year. He's so long and high-waisted that, with long corners like Ramsey, you can't be – there's nobody that doesn't have weaknesses except for maybe Deion Sanders. And, again, with Ramsey, he's a little higher-waisted. He's longer-limbed. So his turn and run isn't as smooth as some smaller corners. He's a little bit stiffer than some corners. And sometimes he plays so square at the line of scrimmage and gets a little heavy-footed when changing direction. Again, partly because he's so aggressive when he's going that his feet – aren't as disciplined in terms of staying light-footed there. And again, that's a technique thing as much as it is anything. And then also lots of drops. He dropped a lot of interceptions in 2015, and I think a lot of those drops were because he was so focused on the wide receiver that by the time he was looking for the ball, it got on him too quickly. And that's where he's got to be more focused on the full game rather than tunnel vision. Now, I don't think, actually, a lot of people have projected him as a safety who steps into the nickel corner role a lot. I don't actually think he's ideal for the nickel corner role. I mean, even though he played that very well at Florida State in 2014, he's not as stop-start sudden, and he can be turned around a little bit by some of the, your Wes Welkers of the world in the slot on some of those things. It's a little tougher for him because he's more of a vertical corner. He's a guy you want on the outside because you don't need to give him safety help. And you can't do all of those, short area things on the outside the way that you can on the inside. So I actually think he's much more of an outside corner. Again, similar to a Charles Woodson in that regard, or a Cromartie or a Richard Sherman, a little bit, one of those bigger, longer corners that forces you to have problems. Now, again, like Woodson, he's capable of going into the nickel in part, and also he's a devastating blitzer. So that's where you do put him in the nickel in some cases. And I think the benefit that you have with, and this is where the comparison to Woodson, even early in his career, really works, is this is a guy that you can move to all of the positions in the secondary depending on what you want in a given play. He can be a chameleon, and he can make your secondary really, really flexible. And I think that's a big thing when you're looking at this moving forward as an NFL draft team. That's why this guy just moves further up your board, because he gives you a lot of scheme flexibility, a lot of things that you can do that you couldn't otherwise do if you didn't have that kind of versatile, unique player in your secondary. Well, we've gone a little bit over time on this one, talking about the Clemson game and also Jalen Ramsey and the Florida State draft crop. But that's going to do it for us today. Now, again, before we get out of here, just a reminder, you can follow me on Twitter at Doc Staples. We're also on Facebook, Unconquered Podcast. You can follow Seminole Sports Radio at Seminoles Radio as well. You can make sure to catch our next podcast, which is going to cover a combination, a range of things, going back to the Houston game, looking at recruiting, quite a bit of stuff. We've got a lot of stuff coming here in the next few weeks. It's a big, busy season, especially recruiting-wise. And also remember, you can subscribe to us on iTunes and through other podcast managers, and rate us as well. I'm Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio of eSporto Channel. Thanks for listening. I made this.